Okay, we're up and running. For today, I want to continue into Shimshon. As we saw last time, there is a very strange story developing here. And what we're going to have to deal with today is really come, you sort of drop straight into the problem in the beginning of Perek Yudalef. And the problem is, how can he do what he did? All right? You know, with all due respect, this is a leader of Am Yisrael, he's a judge. He's you know, a person, a role model, one suspects, for the Jewish people. And here he is, basically running around with any and every non-Jewish woman, or certainly some women that he seems to find in the foreign world of the Plishtim. He went to Gat or Gaza or whatever place it is called today. And that's where he saw essentially his first wife, or the first lady that he connects to. And what we're going to have to try and deal with is really the basic question of how, as you say in Ivrit, Ech wasaidza, how did he do this? How did he allow himself to get involved so much in their lives, so much in their society, so much in their way of life, right? What was he trying to do? And remember, he is from birth a Nazir, he's got extra Kedusha, he's got extra holiness, he's born into a very, very unique situation. And of course, at this point, you know, we begin to understand, or we will begin to understand, why he needed this kind of extra strength. So have a look with me at chapter 14. We're going to go through the whole parak, and hopefully we'll still have a chance also to see, there's one piece that I want to go through as well. Move this back. One piece that I want to go through, which will hopefully enlighten us a bit on what's going on. Just to put it very briefly, there are a number of rabbis who say, there's no question about it, he must have converted these women. And my question is always, if I had a chance to ask the Rambam, who says, no doubt in his mind that these women were converted, my question would still be, but did they light Shabbos candles? In other words, what sort of conversion are we talking about? All right, are we talking about nowadays, we have different levels of conversion, right? We have different groups doing conversion. Although it always upsets me when somebody comes to sort of an Orthodox rabbi and says, I've been converted, and you find it was done by the Reform or Conservative movement, and you have to inform them very gently sometimes, but very, I suppose, forcefully as well, that their Jewishness is not absolutely guaranteed at that point. They have to go through yet another procedure. And that becomes very, very difficult. It always upsets me when that happens. Mainly because people are led astray. People don't know that the sort of conversions that are out there, many of them are very token conversions. And nowadays we're much more strict about converting people to Judaism. In Shimshon's day, and in Shlomo's day, when he marries 1,000 women, and, you know, again, the Rambam says they must have been converted, what sort of conversion are we really talking about is a serious question. And most of the rabbis, as I say that there was some sort of conversion. My guess is it was a dip in the river, which would act as a mikveh, and that would be it. Okay, and is that for real? Is that something which becomes a sincere conversion? Is this something which we take seriously or not? All right, and again, you know, it's one of those questions that we can have maybe two different approaches. And with all due respect to the Rambam and various other rabbis who seem to insist that he converted them, we may be able to come out with a different concept, but we'll deal with that in a minute. So listen to this, chapter 14. Perek Yudalef, those who have the red books, page 115. Vayered Shimshon Timnata. Shimshon goes down to Timna. And immediately, for those who remember the story of Yehuda and Tamar, that also took place in a town called Timna. And there it says that Yehuda went up to Timna. So the rabbis immediately pick on this, as we'll see in a few minutes. How can it be that you're going down to the same place where we were told in another circumstance that the person went up to this place? Alright? You can always argue geographically that it was halfway up the hill, so somebody was coming down from a higher location, someone's going up from a lower location. There's a geographical answer, but there's also other answers to this question. So again, Posuk Aleph. Vayar Shimshon Timnata, he goes down to Timna, right? Vayar Ishat Timnata Mibinot Plishtim. And he sees this woman, we don't even know her name, don't think we ever find out who she is. We don't know. So Philistine lady. And he's with his parents. Now you can imagine, nice Jewish parents, right, coming from wherever. I don't know, let's say whatever Jewish neighborhood or semi-Jewish neighborhood, whichever neighborhood it is, coming from Brooklyn, right? And there he is, and he comes home and says, "Mom and Dad, I've got the perfect shidduch." Okay, and they say, "Wonderful, who is she?" Well, she happens to be a Philistine lady living in Timna. Okay, and you can imagine their reaction was not very positive. But Yomer, look what he says. He says, "Ishara iti b'timnatam ibn plishtim." I saw a woman from the Philistines. V'yata kechuta lilisha. Now please arrange the marriage. Okay, please set up the wedding. Kechu, and it's the language of marriage. Vayiku, the Gemara develops this whole idea of taking. All right, the man vayikach ish isha. The man takes the woman. Meaning that you enter into a bond of marriage. Okay? So that's what he asks his parents to do. Now immediately, okay, and it's interesting that it's the father here who speaks up. Remember in the previous story, the mother was taking the lead, certainly getting the message from God more than the father. But here the father seems to take over. And immediately, Gimel, Vayomer lo aviv, v'imo. His father said to him, Vayomer, and then his mother joined in. Okay, maybe his mother didn't even speak. One can only suggest his mother was sitting there sobbing. Okay, she was crying her eyes out. Shimshon, my dear Shimshon, why are you marrying this woman from the different culture? She's not Jewish. How are we ever going to live this down? And he says, "Hey, bibenot achecha b'chol ami, can't you find from your brother's daughters or from anywhere? In other words, a relative or someone, a cousin or whatever. Isha, you can't find a wife. You're going to these uncircumcised plishtim." Now, reilim is always used as an expression of detriment. You know, these are not our people. Shimshon says to his father, again, the mother's not in the conversation, she's still crying her eyes out. Take her for me. Very key phrase. She is correct. Well, he says in English here, pleasing in my eyes. Now, what happens with Shimshon is a very, very interesting thing. Shimshon is someone who goes very much by his instincts. His instinct tells him that this is the woman that he has to marry. He says, it's just correct, it's right. You know, I've got this gut feeling. Now, if we came home and told our parents, "I've got a gut feeling, I want to marry a nice non-Jewish girl," my parents would have had a gut feeling to express to me their negative feelings about it. And there's no question about this. And yet, Shimshon here doesn't listen to the argument of his parents. He says to them, "Trust me, I know. Kihi yashra be'inai." And that's what he says. And we're going to come back to this phrase because it's very significant. What she is actually, or what Shimshon is arguing, is that there is a certain sense of knowledge that I have in my relationship to God, because he's a Nozim, he's got this sort of extra dimension of holiness. He knows in his mind, in his heart, in his neshama, this is correct. And this is something very odd, and we'll see, we'll come to this in a minute. But Aviv, we'll go on with the psukim just to finish the chapter a bit. But Aviv imo lo yadu. Now his parents did not know. This is all from God. So Shimshon was feeling like the push from Hashem. Okay, this is what Hashem wants. What Shimshon was really doing, he was looking for any excuse. Rashi says, "Alila litgarot ba." The way that Shimshon was going to fight the plishtim, he wanted to do something which was unique, as we said before. He was going to take the battle to them. He was going to go and be amongst the plishtim, and for want of a better word, be an enormous nudnik. Not just a nunnik, he'd be a real pain in the side. He'd be a thorn to them. He was going to do stuff which was going to drive them to despair. But while they're so busy dealing with Shimshon, they forget about having a negative attitude or behavior towards Am Yisrael. In other words, Shimshon is going to engage them in so many sort of petty situations that they turn around and say to him, or rather they turn around and deal with him to the point where they're not dealing or being negative towards the Jews, the Jewish people who are under their control at this time. Remember, they took over their part of Eretz Israel, and they are very strong, and the Jews are being subjugated. But Shimshon says, "You know what I can do? I may not be able to beat them, but I can certainly get them off your back." And that's exactly what he's doing. This is the whole key to the story. And the plishtim were ruling in Israel. So What has Shimshon decided to do? If I take an army and fight them, who knows? Maybe the tide has turned against us because of our behavior. We serve idolatry. We're not good guys. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take a personal initiative here, and I'm going to fight them on their territory in my own way. Unbelievable. And this is very dangerous. You know, can you imagine? Somebody doesn't take a liking to him, one spear, and that's it. Shimshon's gone. So he has to be absolutely sure that he knows what he's doing. And part of what he's doing initially is to infiltrate. When you infiltrate, you become part of the society. How do you do that? Compared it to Eli Cohen, remember that story I told you? By becoming one of them. You become more Syrian than the Syrians. You become more Plishti than the Plishti. Okay, and this is what Shimshon does. And the first thing he has to do is to marry one of them. If he's going to be part of their society, he's going to have to marry one of them. If we're saying that, what about the fact that she wasn't Jewish? Is that now going... Are we going to sort of make up our minds about that? As I said, Rambam says he must have converted her. Is that absolutely 100% logical at this stage? Think about it. If he is finding an excuse to integrate into the Plishti society, will he want to convert these women or not?
No,
he won't, right? He really won't. On the contrary, he may be actually living with them, Davka, because that's the perfect cover for his plot, for his plan. Think about that. You'll say to me, wait a minute, all well and good, but the Torah says don't live with this non-Jewish woman. Says Shimshon, you know what? I'm going to do what is called, we've had this before with Yael, Aveira Lishma. I'm going to do a sin, but I'm doing it for the sake of God. And it fits perfectly into that definition. You know why? Because it's for the sake of Am Yisrael. It's saving the Jewish people from further trouble from the Plishtim. And as opposed to Rambam, and as I said, so many other rabbis, who say that, you know what, he must have converted. How can Shimshon not convert these women? I'm going to argue, and I think I've seen this in different commentaries as well, that Davka could be that he didn't convert them. He wanted them to remain as Plishti as possible, so that gives him the absolute coverage, camouflage that he needs in the Plishti society. Right? He's a shvifon. Remember, he's a snake. He's hiding, he's camouflaging on the path. He's not to be seen. He is amongst them, he is with them, he is part of them. Is this to be tried by anybody else? The answer is no. This is a one-man effort. It absolutely is unique. Never really, I mean, the fact is it wasn't successful in the end, so that it was never tried again. Nobody tried it this way, but Shimshon was the first, I suppose you could say the first and the last to try it. And look what happens here. And again, I'm throwing this idea out there because it is very much in contrast to what you're going to read in mainstream commentary. But I think there is room to argue here from a different point of view that maybe this woman was not converted. And maybe Delilah was not converted. In fact, it bothers me to think that someone like Delilah tricks him so much and really teases him and does everything against him, actually converted to be, and became Jewish. It just doesn't sit well. It sits much more comfortable with me that she didn't convert. And he was with her for a purpose. Now you'll say to me, how could he be with her? And again, we're back to the same question. And the answer is given, and the answer could be given, that again, he's doing a sin for the sake of Am Yisrael. And there are certain situations like that, Yael and Shaul, Eliyahu. We saw examples, and maybe Shimshon can be added to the list. Yeah.
I think it's the Malvin, but don't they still don't say that like she initially converted and then she just like digressed completely
and went back. That is much more technically probably correct, but you know what? It creates a terrible problem. And I'll tell you what the problem is. And I'll just digress literally for 2 minutes. About 20 years ago in London, somebody turned up from Israel. Her name was Mrs. Cohen. Okay, Mrs. Cohen. Sounds very Jewish. The trouble was that what happened was she got converted. She wasn't Jewish. Her husband was Mr. Cohen. He's an Israeli gentleman. And she married him. She was not Jewish. She was from England, somewhere in north of England. And she converted in Israel. At the time, Rabbi Goran, who was the chief rabbi, made the following rule about conversions, that they're only valid if you stay in Israel. This couple left Israel and came to London. So the conversion, therefore, was not valid. Now, this created a hullabaloo like you never can imagine. Got into the press, got into the national press, because she was insisting that her conversion should be recognized outside Israel. So the religious authority in England said, but wait a minute, you're not Jewish outside Israel. And then she said, but wait a minute, either I'm Jewish or I'm not. Right? You know, that was how could you be Jewish one day and not Jewish? See what I'm saying? That's the problem of conversions which happen one day and then can be revoked the next day. And the reality is that once you are converted, the suggestion halakhically is, you know, all for one and one for all, you're in. And the fact that it can actually be reversed, which is what you're suggesting here, is not an easy solution to the problem. It's possible. And Rabbi Goran obviously thought it was possible, because that's the sort of conversions that he was doing in Israel 20, 30 years ago. But as I'm saying, even if it was possible, it creates a terrible problem. And this woman turned up in all different public forums and embarrassed a lot of rabbis because, you know, nothing they could do. Rabbi Goran, who was alive at the time, they wrote to him and said, what are we going to do? And he said, out of Israel, she's not Jewish. That was the deal. The deal was, you stay in Israel. And his logic makes sense. Because Israel, you'll be in a Jewish society. He was hoping that they would become more religious. And they decided to go and move to some place in England. She wanted to get her kids into a Jewish school. And of course, her being the mother, she wasn't Jewish. So the kids are not Jewish. How can you take them into the Jewish school? And this was a whole performance. And it was unreal at the time. So what I'm saying is, possible, but not ideal. Okay? So your point's a good point. Yeah?
Is it true that if someone converts, if they're not Shomer Shabbat and completely kosher, and they're not considered Jewish anymore?
It's a very good question, and I don't want to comment because it depends on the people who do the conversion. All right. What happens is that once you're converted, from the way I understand it, that's it. You dunk, the man has the brit, finish, you're Jewish. The problem comes along afterwards, I suppose, when you don't necessarily fulfill a Jewish lifestyle, whether that became a condition at the time of conversion. In Israel, again, as I said, nowadays I don't think they impose Rabbi Goran's solution. But what they do have, which is the problem in Israel, is a lot of people coming from, originally from Russia, and now coming from Ethiopia, and coming from all these different countries, who, for want of a better word, claim to be Jewish, but you've got no proof. There were no documents, right? There was nothing written down. You don't have any marriage documents. You don't have any records of weddings. So what the Israeli rabbinate does before, let's say, an Ethiopian young man or woman get married, is to insist on what they call giyur l'chumra. They do a conversion in the strict sense. In other words, in case you're not Jewish, before you get married, you'll become Jewish. For the woman, it's easy because she's got to go to mikveh anyway, right? So the mikveh serves two purposes, the preparation for marriage and conversion. For the man, it's a bit more complicated because in most cases they've had bris. So it's a very minor thing. It's called the forgotten expression in Hebrew, something dumb. You just literally, it's a little cut or something. It's not even a cut. Just like a token that this person is now Jewish. And that's it. And it's a very, very simple procedure. But it's one of those things that in Israel has become, over the years, very controversial. All right, this whole idea of the standard of conversion. Because in Israel, what are you going to say? You're going to say they're all going to become religious? The answer is no, they're not. But at least if they're staying in Israel, the same idea of Rabbi Goran made originally, there's a hope that in the Jewish country, in the Jewish society, there's more chance of them connecting to Jewish life. Kosher and Shabbat and everything else.
So it's the same thing. It's complicated. The person who converted was a baby?
Yeah, babies are more technical, easier in certain ways and more complicated in other ways. All right, because what happens is that there is this assumption that the child accepts upon him or herself being Jewish, not really knowing, right? But when they get to the age of 12 and 13, boy or girl, then you have a ceremony. They go to the Bet Din, who did the conversion originally, and they have to ask them the question, do you want to remain Jewish? And that could be very traumatic, all right? Most cases, the answer is, of course, because, you know, what do you mean? I'm brought up in a Jewish home. But there can be cases where, you know, over the years, the parents have sort of gone away from Jewish lifestyle, whatever it is, and that child now, will that child confirm his or her Jewishness? Not always guaranteed. Right? So it's very delicate. A lot of the conversion issues, particularly today, are not easy issues. And here, when you read this story and you read about and you talk about conversion, it becomes more complicated because somebody goes to a Novi class and they hear about Shimshon, who just basically went like this and the woman became Jewish. And they go to the Bet Din today and say, Rabbi, I just read about Shimshon doing it and I read about Shlomo doing it, so why can't you do it? They were great men. Why can't you convert this woman and, you know, she'll be Jewish? Snap your fingers. And the answer is because this is a different world, different time. It's not today. Today, conversion is very, very delicate. I was talking about this in a group. This must have been about 10 years ago. And a girl put up her hand. was married, wearing a shaitan, wearing a peyah, a wig. And she said to me, Rabbi, you know, and she said in front of the whole class, and it was very open, and she said, Rabbi, you should know that I'm converted. And I thought, I was taken aback. And I said, very interestingly, what was the story? And it turns out that she had been originally, as a child, converted. And at the age of 12, she reconfirmed her conversion. And she went to the hospital, exactly what I'm telling you. This is why I'm reminded of it. This was like 10, 11 years ago. Very interesting. So it does happen, but all these conversion issues are very, very difficult. Okay, see your local rabbi who will then inevitably refer you to a different rabbi. Anyone here comes from Passaic, if you know Passaic community, there's a Rabbi Reback who is very, very expert on conversions in the Passaic community in New Jersey. My guess is in Lakewood there's also somebody. They're around New York, I'm sure there's plenty of people, but outside there are people who are recognized authorities in this field. Not easy. It's a bit of a minefield. Alright, that was the long and short of conversion, but there's a lot more to say. So listen to this. Back to his parents having conniptions. Hey, Vayerichim Sham Vavivimo Timnata. So they're going down to Timnah, obviously, to celebrate the wedding. Alright? Maybe not so willingly as one can imagine. And Vayavoad Karme Timnata. They get to these kramim, which are like vineyards, right? There's a kind of a young lion which is roaring in the distance, so, and you can't go through the vineyard. You hear the sound of a lion. So Shimshon says to his parents, Abba, Ima, wait here, I'm going to go and check it out. Now of course, what this actually shows you is something else. But, it's a great story. But Tzitzach Avruch Hashem, the Spirit of God came upon him. The Targum says the Spirit of Strength. V'yishaseu k'shasa gedi, got hold of the lion and tore it in half. He basically tore up the line like you would tear up a piece of paper. Bless you. And umuma ein biyado, no nothing, no sword, no weapons, just his bare hands. Quite amazing. Lo higid laviv limo, but he didn't tell his parents. Et asher asah, what he did, all right? Because he came back and he said, Abba and Ima, the lion's gone away. Let's move on. And they didn't even know what he'd done. All right? They didn't ask. They didn't. They had no inkling at all that he had physically ripped the lion in two, which is quite a story. And what happens? He went down and spoke to this woman. The same expression again. She was correct. She was pleasant, it says here, pleasing in the eyes of Shimshon. He seems to have gone with his instinct again that this was the woman to marry. Now, of course, it's the parents at this point in time, when we don't hear any more about them, and my guess is they did not even attend the wedding. They might have got to the point where, you know, they said, Shimshon, you want to go ahead? Go, and we're going home. Right? They didn't even stay around for the Sheva Brachos, as they say. And I say that phrase very advisedly, because it turns out that from this story, we do learn about the concept of 7 days of celebration. It's very interesting. And there's a bit to say here in a minute. Hey, verse 8. So after a few days, he came back to marry her, as it were. Right? So in other words, the parents went back, they set up the wedding, and now he's coming back to marry. And he saw the carcass of the lion. And there's been a bee's nest settled in the carcass of the animal. Okay? Why we're told that, as you'll see later on. What does Shimshon do? He went, as it were, down on his hands. And he took, obviously, some honey from the nest, which is always very delicious, as long as the bees don't actually take a liking to you. Took it back to his parents. And they brought them some honey, all the way from the land of the Philistines. He never told them where it came from the body of the lion, from this story. Because he didn't want them to know. In other words, you know, his parents might not only be worried about the fact that he's going to marry this girl, but all of a sudden he's tearing lions in two. You know, there's something very odd about him, and maybe he's a bit worried that they are going to react negatively. It's not clear what's going on in the moment, but you'll see. Yud. Vayered aviyu el isha. At this point, the father does go down concerning the woman. In other words, the father decided, well, I'm going to come back with my son. We've set up the wedding. He is going to come back with him to be at the wedding. But Yasham Shimshon Mishter, Shimshon arranged the party. Ki Ken Yasur Bachurim, as was the custom in that place. All right, they used to make a celebration. They organized it. Vayihikir otam oton. They saw him. In other words, all these people in Timnas saw Shimshon. Vayichush loshim mereim vayuito, and he and they had 30 people with him. In other words, what happened was that he wanted to make some sort of celebration, so they brought people in to make the wedding. Was it kedasu kedin, as they say, with a rabbi, with a chazan? The answer is obviously not. But one assumes it was bottom line, whatever you want to say, something. Was it a chuppah? I doubt it. Yud bet. Vayomer lahem Shimshon, achudana lachem chida. So Shimshon sees an opportunity. And he says that I'm going to ask you a riddle. Now, again, this is very odd. There is a concept in certain societies. I know this from England because everyone in my office where I worked in London for a time was the topic of discussion was clue number 42 in the Times crossword puzzle. Alright? You don't have such a following of the New York Times crossword puzzle, but you do have in London of the London Times crossword puzzle. Alright? And people do even now, there's a webpage for this, and they share clues and they share hints and ideas. You know, sometimes the clues are impossible and they have to resort to sort of discussing it with people online what the answer is. And people are very intrigued by these puzzles. Chida. Some of you will know this, and my guess is if you're on any online gaming sort of page, you know, where they do these games, which apparently just become sort of very, very addictive as well. Not a very good thing. And it seems to be much more, in a way, it sort of sounds to me more sinister. But again, people sort of connect through different games or pursuits, and they get very hooked on this. In Philistine society, they like to have riddles, all right? And Shimshon knew about this, and he set them a riddle. And the riddle was going to be an excuse, again, to make an attack. You'll see in a minute. And he says, "Im ageta giru vota li shivat yimei mishteh matzatem." You've got 7 days of the partying. And as I said, this is the proof of Sheva Brachos for 7 days. All right, the parties for 7 days. Then he says, if you, within the 7 days, you find the solution, there's a prize. I'm going to give you each a new blanket and a new suit. This was, in those days, not very cheap. The clothing, those are much more expensive, relatively speaking. Nowadays, we have everything made in China. We don't have a problem. But in those days, they really had to make everything by hand. He was promising an enormous reward if they found out the answer. Listen to this. You can't tell me, possibly, you gimel. You've got to give me the same amount. 30 blankets, 30 suits of clothing. They said they liked the challenge. Say your puzzle and we will listen. In other words, they were prepared to take up the challenge. Fascinating. As they said, the puzzle goes like this. Food comes out from the ocha, from the one who eats, yatsa machal, comes food. Umeaz yatsa matok, from the strong comes something sweet. That was his puzzle. Work it out, tell me what it means, and give you 7 days. Alright? So for 3 days, the first 3 days, they didn't have a clue. And of course, they were getting very frustrated. They sat around for 3 days, these guys, and they didn't know what to do. And we want to get the prize. Vayihi got to the seventh day, and of course, they're now getting frantic, because they know that they're going to lose. Shimshon. So they said to Shimshon's wife, and they decided to go the bad route. They said, Patiyati Shed. Right, seduce your husband. They said, "Yeah, get lo et achida, and let him tell us. He'll tell us the solution. Find out from him what the solution is. You're one of us. Help us out. Pen nisro otach, and in case you don't want to do it, we have a little incentive that we will burn your house, otach ve beit avir baish, the father's house, and you will be killed if you don't tell us. Wow, not much of a choice. But hali yarshenu karatem lanu halo, and as he puts it here. Have you called us here to make us poor? In other words, are we here to join in the simcha, in inverted commas, right? To join in the celebration so that we should become poor? We want to win the bet. So please help us win the bet. And of course, what happened? She started crying before Shimshon. She said to him, this is after a week of getting married, poor guy, she's already driving him nuts. And she says, you only want to hate me, you don't love me, you made this puzzle for my people, and you didn't tell me the solution. You know, you're not fair. So he said, I didn't even tell my parents, I'm going to tell you. No way. But she decided to use the gifts that God gave her, and she started crying constantly. And she cried, Shivat Yamim. Do not try this at home, but apparently it works. She cried for 7 days. Asher Yalahem Amishdeh. But during the time when they had the party, or maybe after the party, on the seventh day, this is presumably after the third day, she started crying till the end of the seventh day, and that he finally gave in. Couldn't stand it anymore. She was crying her eyes out and didn't stop crying. Unbelievable. But she was known as the tantrum queen. And what happened was, she told the solution to her people. So of course they run to Shimshon and say, Shimshon, we know the answer, all right? And they are they think they're smart. Listen to this. So they came to Shimshon on the seventh day, the men of the city, just before the sun sets, and as they say, just at the last minute, ma matok midavash. What is sweeter than honey? Because remember, he said something comes out which is sweet. He says, so they said that's honey, or ma oz me'ari. What's stronger than a lion? That was the solution, that the honey comes out of the lion. That's referring to the dead lion with the bee's nest, right? But and of course, Shimshon's reaction is, well done, lads, you've exactly done what I wanted you to do, and I'm now going to take my revenge, because you pushed my wife to tell you the answer. Unacceptable. Had you not plowed with my animal, in other words, not a nice way to refer to his wife, but he says basically you used her. Right, as you would say nowadays, you use the person, just the expression, the turn of phrase they use in those days, lo matzatim chidati, you never found out the solution. So you guys behaved appallingly. You used her when you should not have used her. At this point, Shimshon does something which is totally unexpected. But titzlach alav ruch Hashem, again, spirit of Hashem, of strength comes upon him, vayered Ashkelon, he goes to Ashkelon, which is part of the Philistine territory, Bayach mehem shloshimish, and he slaughtered 30 men. Not necessarily the 30 men that he made the puzzle to. He just went there and found 30 men. Maybe innocent. Strange. Vayikach et achalitzotam, and he took their clothing. Vayitein achalifot lemagidei amchida, and of course he took all the suits off these men and gave them as the prize to those who gave him the solution. Vayicharapo, and he was very angry. Vayal beit avi, and he went up to his father's house. He left the Philistines. He left. He left her. He left his wife there. He left everything, and he went home. But and she was immediately designated to another man, whether it was by marriage or not. You know, the Philistine society, as we can imagine, was not particularly moral. So whatever it was, she was given to somebody else, and Shimshon was gone. From this very odd, strange story, we're beginning to get a pattern. The pattern is that Shimshon has decided, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to be the eternal pain in the neck. I'm going to be a nudnik. I'm going to set them puzzles, or I'm going to make problems for them, or I'm going to do things which they cannot blame on Yisrael. There is nothing here where you can blame the Jewish people and say, Shimshon the Jew had come to us and did what he did. There's not Shimshon the Jew. Shimshon eventually you'll see, it's called Shimshon the Timnite. Because it didn't even occur to them where he originally come from. As far as they were concerned, it's all about him. He's got some sort of beef against us, and he's taking it out on us. Very smart. Because what happens when he takes it out on us? Who does not get affected? The rest of Jews. Am Yisrael is safe. These people, obviously, they tell their friends, and the friends tell their friends, and Shimshon is beginning to have an effect. He is someone that, number one, they treat with great respect, in the sense that, you know, you don't start with him because you know that he's a tough guy. And on the other hand, you know what? He is somebody that we have got to be very careful with, and we know that if he's going to challenge us, we have got to behave in a certain way, not to go underhand and did do what they did, and this poor woman suffered because of it. Whether she was a poor woman or not, I don't know, but it seems to be that she's kind of being affected by this, obviously. And as you'll see in a minute, she in fact, or you'll see in the next chapter, which we'll do, please God, after Yom, you'll see that in fact she unfortunately doesn't survive all of this. It's really unbelievable. But Shimshon has a plan. The plan is, the more I push them by myself, the less that they will push me, my people, the less they will come against Am Yisrael. And I just want to show you this page, because I think it really sums it all up. Let me hand these out. I don't need too many of them. Just want to give these over. Post them that way. Send them sort of that way. Have a look at this, because it really is, it really is quite something. The question again, as we said, two questions that we saw in the chapter. One, at the beginning, the geography, he went down, and another place it says he went up. So the question is, where is Timnah? Is Timnah down or is Timnah up? If you need more pages, then let me hand them over. Just a second. Yeah, you've got enough there? Are you still there? Yeah, there's a few there. If you've got spares, then you can just give them back. Shimshon went down, he went up. You know, in other words, where is Timnah? What is this all about? I mean, you can obviously understand that going down here, by Yerit, is not necessarily a geographical description, but, somebody help me out here, it is a description of Shimshon. What's the metaphor here for going down in? Spiritually, right? He's going down in his spiritual level. Now again, Shimshon is prepared to compromise because he feels the purpose is a major thing, to bring Am Yisrael a bit of respite, to stop the enemy attacking Am Yisrael, pressing the Jewish people. Because imagine living under the Philistines, what it must have been like. They must have been taxed to the limits, and they must have had to supply with slaves and all these awful things. And Shimshon decided, I'm going to give them something else to worry about. When they have a news broadcast or the equivalent in those days, in the land of the Philistines, it won't be about the controlling Eretz Israel, it'll be about this rogue who came into our society and the problems that he's caused. And of course, they would say, on one hand, if you see this man, don't approach him under any circumstance. Give him a wide berth. Don't go anywhere near him. On the other hand, let us know where he is. Alright? And of course, he's going to come back and he's going to go away and he's going to come back and he's going to go away. As I said, so comparable to the story that I told you last week about the Israeli spy. During the summers when he was off from government work in Syria, he used to go home to Israel. Unbelievable. Don't know how he actually could do it. Nowadays you couldn't do it because of surveillance. There's no way that he could be in both places, you know, sort of live the life in Syria and then come home to Israel. They would be found out much quicker than that. But in those days, one suspects the surveillance was not so strong, one knows. And the reality is that he used to come home in the summers. Listen to this. Look at the page you have, and this is something very special. Again, Rav Levi. We're not going to go through the whole thing, but I'll just show you some of the main points. After the top paragraph, which we've just read, which was the whole story at the beginning of Shimshon going down, finding the woman, leaving his parents at the crossroads, going and destroying the lion, the whole thing at the end here, after that paragraph in the heavy print, there's a paragraph in light print. Ketiv, it says, Vayered Shimshon underline, Vayered Shimshon Timnata, and with Yehuda, it says that he went up. Yehuda, the son of Yaakov, in the story of Tamar, he goes up to Timnah. So make up your mind. You go down, or you go up. What's going on? Amar Rabbi Elazar, so this is a quote from Gemara. Rabbi Elazar says, Shimshon shenitganeba. What does that mean? Rashi, shenasam ibnot plishtim asurot lo. According to Rashi, he married a forbidden woman. Rashi doesn't say anything about conversion. Alright? Very interesting. So maybe Rashi would be more open to the suggestion we made before that this is what is called an Avera for the sake of God. Alright? Maybe. Yeah.
Where are we?
Where are we reading on the right hand side on the first page? Not on the single column but on the double column, on the right hand side. Okay? And it's the first section under the black print, the lighter print where it's underlined. Okay? And we're on the fourth line of that paragraph. So again, Shimshon, who was Nitganeba, meaning that he married someone who was forbidden, he went down in spirituality. Kativ be Yerida. That's why it says Vayerim, a spiritual description. Yehuda shenitaleba, but Yehuda went up when he married Tamar, when he saw Tamar, and he conceived a child. That child, in fact, those twins, right? One of the twins became the messianic line of eventually to produce King David. That was going up. That was something which was happening in a positive way. Rashi says, Shemisham Nalduz Peretz Vazara, Shemidu Malochim Hanavim Yisrael, kings and prophets came out of those two twins. Ketiv Be Aliyah says that he went up. So therefore the going up and the coming down is not geographical, but it's spiritual. Shimshon Vayerit Tinate went down, he was already compromising his spiritual status. But he did it, as we say, for a purpose. And it's fascinating. The other two rabbis in the Gemara, they talk much more about what they call about a geographic explanation. But Yared, from one side you go up, and from the other side you go down. Right? A bit like the buildings, if anyone of you lived in Har Nof in Yerushalayim, okay, some of you, I don't know, there's various schools in Har Nof. If you ever visited, you'll know that it's built on a hill, to the point where same building, one side of the building, you go in on the first floor, and the other side of the building, which is built on a different level, you come in on the fourth floor. Alright? So if you're going to the third floor apartment, from one side of the building you will be going up, and from the other side of the building you'll actually be going down. It's the way the building is built. A lot of buildings over there at the bottom of Har Nof literally do have two entrances, one on ground floor level and one on fourth floor level. It's just very weird the way they build them. That's one example, probably many examples in Israel, in Yerushalayim particularly. So, again, the other rabbi says going up and going down, geographic. But the first rabbi here, Rabbi Loza, says no, this is a spiritual description. We'll go to the next section, which is, again, in the heavier print. In other words, why are we saying that Shimshon is worse here than Yehuda? Because he's going down. Yehuda's going up, meaning positive. Shimshon's going down, meaning negative. Why is he worse? We just read it. It said that his marriage to this woman from Timnah was from God. It was Hashem's will. He was looking for an excuse to attack the Plishtim. And Reb Levi does not like the concept that Rashi suggests, that the woman was totally forbidden. That's why Shimshon is going down. And therefore it's a sign of doing something wrong. So Reb Levi cannot stomach, and he brings here from the Rambam, the same concept, these women must have been converted. But as I said before, according to Rashi, it could very well be that we can suggest that, you know what, Shimshon needed a cover. And when you need a cover, you become so like the people that you're trying to infiltrate, that part of the infiltration is to marry into that society. And then they consider you as being one of them, not as an outsider, but as an insider. And it could very well be that's what Rashi means. He married up, he did compromise his spiritual status, of course he did. But he was doing it for a reason, to anah. He was looking for an excuse, something, some reason to attack them. It's very interesting. Alright, so as I'm suggesting, there's actually an argument between the Rambam and Rashi about this very issue that we raised at the beginning. Was Shimshon doing something here negative? Was he doing something which was, in fact, not so negative because he converted them, like Rambam says, or was he doing something negative, but with a purpose for Lashem? He was doing it for Lashem Shemayim and Avera Lishma, sin, but for the sake of God. Two different points of view. I hope that makes sense, seeing it from two sides. All right. Have a look at the next paragraph. Omnam, however, hitgayrutam lo hayta mushlamet bebechina hilchot gerim. What the suggestion is that they did convert, but not a complete conversion. Right? This is one suggestion, which I don't really want to go into. As far as I'm concerned, at this point in time, I think we're going to say either that they were converted, like Rambam says, and other rabbis say, or like we're suggesting in Rashi, that there was no conversion. It was done davka without conversion, because that's the way you become camouflage, shvifon. That's the way you become a snake. You blend into the surroundings. Alright? Go down to the paragraph which begins, it's like 12 lines from the bottom. V'yesh lehosif od al hochotav shel radak rak b'maseh delila plishtit hashlishit shedavak bo amru alav chazal dildo et ma'asav distalit shechina minay. What the radak is talking about again is the whole question of her conversion. He says the only person that he married where all of a sudden it had a negative effect on him clearly was Delilah. But before that, he says, Mashma delifneze, where it's underlined, the next underlining, Haita'ot Shekhinah Imo. When he married this Timnite woman, the Shekhinah did not leave him. So the suggestion is that, you know what, didn't do such a bad thing. And what I'm saying is, if it's Avera Lishma, then the Gemara says that's greater than Mitzvah Shalom Lishma, the Shekhinah will still be with him. Alright, he's doing a sin, but he's doing it for the sake of Am Yisrael. He wants to do something to help the Jewish people to save Am Yisrael. And I think, I'll be honest with you, that sits more comfortably with me than the whole concept of Geirus and having to worry about whether they're converted or whether they're Jewish. I mean, what Jewishness remotely are we talking about? Same with Shlomo. The end of the day, when he's got these thousand women sitting in the palace, who lit Shabbos candles in Shlomo's palace? You know what the answer is? Well, there's two answers. Number one, did they light Shabbos candles? Because it may very well have been the minhag had not begun yet. And assuming that they did, you know who lit Shabbos candles? Give me one answer. Thousand wives, all converted. Shlomo did not marry a nice Jewish girl from anywhere, from Brooklyn or from Bnei Brak. No one. Who lit the Shabbos candles in Shlomo's house? Only one answer to that question. Sorry? No, Bathsheba was... Alright, you can say Bathsheba, but after she died. The answer is?
Hidden.
That's the only answer you can say. He's the only one who's Jewish in the whole place. Alright? Every wife of Shlomo is not Jewish. I mean, they're converted according to tradition. But you know what? Could very well be like we're saying here. Shlomo realized the only way to make peace with the people around him is to marry their daughters. The kings had daughters. You marry the daughters, we have peace. Okay? And that's the way you did it. Called political marriages. And you read the history of the world, you read European history, it's what the British did for years. That's why they're related to the Germans, they're related to the Greeks, related to the Russian royal family, related to every royal family, the Brits. Because they go back in history 200 years and they all marry around the world, all these different princesses in different countries. Alright? Queen Victoria married Albert. Albert was from Germany. Victoria was from England. I mean, this is the way they did it. Because as long as you got married to another person, another country, you had peace with that country. At least for a short period of time. Shlomo did the same thing in the ancient world. Exactly the same. Kind of smart. What we're going to say is like this, and Reb Levi's got a lot to say about the whole question of Shlomo's behavior and Shimshon's behavior, and as I said, to me, it boils down to two approaches. Either there is conversion, and then you have to get into the whole discussion of what sort of conversion it was, or, I think, point to Rashi, I'm going to suggest, there wasn't conversion. But you know what? This is one of the list of very few times when an Avera is performed for the sake of God. It seems to be acceptable. What I want you to do is go to the other column. Go to the other column, and again, we still haven't answered the question. Whichever way you look at it, why Shimshon is looked upon so negatively in this story. At the end of the day, it says Vayered. It says he went down. If he was doing something positive, why does it say that he went down, which we said means spiritual? So look at the column on the left-hand side. And it's the piece which is about 10 lines from the bottom. Havei Omer. About Shimshon, I would say, Shonehu Maaseh Yehuda v'Tamar Kalato Maaseh Shimshon. Now, I'm going to make a distinction between Shimshon and Yehuda in the following way. B'Maaseh Tamar Haita Kol Kavanah Ta Ach V'Rak L'Shem Yibam or L'Shem HaKamat Zerem Beit Yaakov. Tamar had a very positive contribution there. She wanted to have a child from Yehuda in order to create a situation of a continuation of the line of Yehuda's family. Aval b'maaseh shel Shimshon, but with Shimshon it was different. Haya gam tzad shelo l'shem shamayim. We said it's avera lishma, but to do something lishma has got to be completely for the sake of God. In Shimshon's case, and this is the point which is so difficult and is so fundamental, there was a certain fault which we're already beginning to understand. And of course the question is, what is it all about? Look at the last paragraph, where it's indented. Tana Rabbana, this is taken from the Gemara again. Shimshon be'einav mara. Shimshon rebelled with his eyes. What does that mean? Shenema, because it says, Vayomer Shimshon laviv, ota kachli kihi yeshara be'einai. That phrase that we pointed out before. She is pleasing in my eyes. What does that mean, says the Gemara? Leficha nakru plishtim et einav. Terrible punishment that he was blinded by the plishtim. Famous story. They blinded him. But it says, Aini, is that so? Is it really? something which was bad, v'kativa, vivimo lo yodu kimi Hashem hi, im ken eizem merit yeshkan, if this is all from God, why is it called a rebellion? Why is Shimshon blamed for this? If God wants it to be this way, that he should marry this woman, the Plishti. Ki azal miyad bata yashrute azal. Mikom makom, it says in Hebrew, at the bottom, kishalach acha yashrut einav halach. I'll tell you what's going on here, and I'll explain this. And this is explained on the back of the page that you have, in the name of Rabbi Dessler. Rabbi Dessler is one of the great rabbis of the pre- and post-war period. He lived in London during the war. And after the war, he became the Mashgiach, one of the main rabbis in the yeshiva in Ponovich in Bnei Brak, the new Ponovich yeshiva, which was built in memory of the old yeshiva that was destroyed by the Germans. All the boys were killed by the Germans. Very few survivors. But the new yeshiva was built in Israel, now is one of the biggest yeshivot in the world. And Rabbi Dessler was there till 1954. He died in 1954. And he wrote some wonderful books and gave many talks, and these have been put into English, Strive for Truth. Some of you may have the book, you may know it. And he writes like this. He says that Shimshon had a fault. To us, it doesn't sound like a fault. But in real terms, for a tzaddik, it's a problem. The problem is like this. Shimshon was reliant on what he saw. When he saw something, and he felt that it was right, then he would follow his instinct, as I said before. And why would he follow his instinct? Because he believed that when he saw something and felt that this was the right thing to do, this was a message from Hashem. It was God telling him to do what he had to do. Followed his eyes. I mean, you can argue this when you go shopping. All right, you're out with your mum and you're shopping, and you see something, a skirt, I don't know, and you fall in love with it, and you tell your mother, you know, that I totally believe this is going to change my life. Okay, this particular piece of clothing. And your mother, of course, you know, sort of is not particularly enamored with that argument, but you become very passionate about it, whatever. You know, lahavdil, you put all your life and soul into this. And of course, what parent is not going to say, well, in that case, you know, obviously we'll buy it, put it into the shopping, whatever, and we'll go and pay for it. And Shimshon is doing something much more than that. He's not just buying clothing here. He's talking about spiritual matters. He's seeing this woman, and he's seeing in her a means to an end. And in his heart, in his neshama, in his soul, he feels, look, by the fact that I see this and I know I have to do this, it must be because Hashem wants me to do it. And the problem is that sometimes Shimshon was saying that because he really felt it, and sometimes he was saying it because, as they say, he was being led astray. He saw things and he became overwhelmed by what he saw. And you know what? Sometimes you just don't think straight. This is the issue that men have sometimes in sort of very, sort of situations with, in this type, certainly in the Philistine type of society, the women probably did not dress the way they were supposed to, they did not look the way they were supposed to, you know, he was enticed, he was overcome by what he saw. And Shimshon is someone who, in what he did with all the kavana, with all the Shem Shamayim that he put into it, didn't quite make the grade. And this is what we're going to suggest. It's an unbelievable suggestion. And I just want to show you this insight. Look at this. It's on the back of the page that I gave you. And it's where it says Rav Dessler died 1954. B'she'el azot in the Hebrew. And I want to show you this because it is quite unbelievable. The demands of being a tzaddik. God demands of you that when you say you're doing things for the sake of God, it's absolute and it's never deviate. It's never going to be deviating from that line. If you deviate from the line, then you're criticized for deviation. Unbelievable. And listen to this. I hope this makes sense because it's an incredible concept. Rabbi Dessler explains. Listen to this. Rabbi Dessler is bothered by, like all of us, by the question, why did he have to marry these women? He leman limso alilot pratiot ale. To find excuses to attack the Plishtim. Fine. Ki mefarash bikra mashem he. It's from God. Ki tuanahu mevakesh miplishtim. He's looking for an excuse. Vayazer b'derech horat sha'a. It's like a sort of temporary measure. Shimshon b'gevurat kedushato. Because Shimshon was so incredibly holy. Hayab yicholto litgaber kol kshayim. He could overcome all the negatives. ולהישאר בקדושתו, to remain holy, בשלימות גם במצבים האלה, to remain holy at this time. In which case, if he's such a holy guy, and he's overcoming all of this, why is it Vayeren? Why do we still say that he went down? He lost a spiritual level. Says Rabbi Dessler, we're going to go to the paragraph after the next paragraph. Ta'uto, underline. And this is the middle of that piece. Ta'uto haita acheret legamre. The problem that Shimshon had is a different problem. Upirshu chazal b'tanchuma, the rabbis explain, go to the next line, end of the line. Shimshon b'mash nitga'ebo nifra mimenu. Shimshon had too much self-reliance. Shimshon was the sort of guy that he says, I see it, I gotta have it. And he always felt that when he saw it, and he felt he had to have it, it's because God wanted him to do it. And you know what? It became something which to him was overly confident. He became overly reliant on this particular ability. And it was not correct. Shimshon always should have asked the question, is this the way I should be behaving? And Shimshon's attitude was, if I saw it and it pleased me, I'm going to do it. And he didn't question it. And says Rabbi Dessler, this was something which comes from guidance, comes from pride. It comes from a sense of, I know best. I know what I'm doing, don't even discuss it, don't even talk about it, no consultation, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. It's a very difficult point, but listen to this. Ta'otoy ta'acheret legamri, the next line. Shimshon b'mash nitga'ebo nifra mimenu shne'emar. What does it mean? Vayomer Shimshon l'aviv. Shimshon said to his father, Ota kachli, take this woman, ki hi yashra be'inai. That phrase again. She is pleasing to me. L'ficha v'yechazu plishtim v'yinakrit einam. What did the Philistines do to him eventually? They blinded him. Sort of midah k'negi midah, measure for measure. Hainu shenitga'eh b'malato. Because he became so proud of the fact that he was so on a high level, such a high level, v'ga'ava, this pride, pagma b'shem shemayim shalom, spoiled his devotion to God. V'lefichach lo hitzliyah. He wasn't successful. Wow. So what are we suggesting here? That Shimshon was an incredible tzaddik, but there was a fault, and the fault was his own level of self-reliance. He would rely on his own estimation, and in a number of cases, it was incorrect. It led him to do things that he should not have done. Yeah.
And that's why he goes down.
That's why he goes down, yeah. And by marrying this woman,
overly
confident with his ability to be holy, right? As they say, he was kind of a holy guy, but he was, I suppose you would say, holier than that.
Right.
But not in the sense we'll use it today, but in his sense. I'm so holy, I can't make a mistake. I'm so holy that I can't make an error.
God, like,
and that lowered him, yeah, yeah. And it's an unbelievable statement. What an analysis of the whole story. So what are we dealing with? We're not dealing with a bad guy. We're not dealing with a muscle man on the beach in LA or wherever you find these guys. The reality is we're dealing with a great tzaddik. We're dealing with a great individual who could not live up to the standard that was expected of him. What was expected of him? Purity. Purity l'shem shemayim. And in his world, his l'shem shemayim, his sense of being connected to God was affected by his own, unfortunately, his own level of self-pride. I'm so mighty, I'm so strong, nothing can go wrong. Right? I'm Sam the man, right? And that's what he believed. And unfortunately, it's a problem. Look at the last five lines. It's amazing analysis. I think it's something very special. The last five lines. Gunotosho Shimshon nindedet eifo b'midat malaton. His downfall is because of his high level. Yashrut einav gedola kokach, that his sense of correctness in what he saw was so great. Ad shebechol davar nireh lo yashar. Anything that seemed correct to him, haya batur shedavar shekedusha. He immediately assumed it was holy. He never make a mistake. He was infallible. And of course the answer is nobody's infallible. Umalo bilti museget zu, and this impossible level, he shagarmalo lifgon bishleimud ma'asav l'shem shamayim, it spoiled his whole idea of being for doing things for the sake of God. Kinit ga'eba, because he became overly proud, overly boasting essentially of what he could do. Nit bonena ma karo yirida itzakalmonim. This is called yirida. For us, it doesn't even compute. It doesn't even make sense.
But for Shimshon, it's unbelievable. He was a man, because of his holiness, was expected to be at 100%. And if he compromised in that 100%, even a small amount, 2% compromise, and he decided that whatever he saw was correct, because he felt that his neshama, his whole level of holiness would guide him, and he was infallible. This is basically what we're saying, and that became a source of self pride and almost to the point where he could be boasting about it and become overconfident. For Shimshon, unacceptable, and that is Vayered. He goes down. He doesn't stay on his level. And of course, as we go along, he goes down and down and down. At the end, you'll see the ultimate repair. I'll just come to your question in a second. The ultimate repair of what happens to Shimshon in the end is where he gives his life for the sake of the Jewish people and he dies the Shem Shemayim. And there he's not doing anything for himself anymore. He's doing it completely for God. What could he be doing? Killing himself in the process. It must be totally for the sake of God. It's like a repair. Tikkun Olam at the end is remarkable. But Shimshon goes through this crisis and wham. This is analysis that blows. Every time I teach this, I just get blown away by this. I have to tell you. So amazing. The idea that, you know, you judge this man in such a level is beyond belief. Osna, you're going to say something.
No.
All right. I don't know what to say to you. It's something worth thinking about. This idea that in the end of the day, again, let's just summarize. In terms of conversion, Rambam, all the women were converted. Rashi seems to say that one of the reasons why he seemed to go down in stature is because they weren't. They were a surah. And the question is, we're saying they're forbidden. Do we, in fact, suggest, according to Rashi, that we're talking here about Avirah L'Shem Shemayim, and fits in perfectly what we're saying now? Because if we say that he's doing an Avirah L'Shem Shemayim, the big thing with Shimshon is always to do things L'Shem Shemayim, for the sake of God. And that's why Vayered, even though he's doing something which is going to save the Jewish people, and is going to do incredible things for Am Yisrael, you know what? It's not good. Because in the end, he becomes overly confident in his ability to decide what's good and what's not good. And he loses perspective. And eventually he follows his eyes, as the Gemara says, and they let him down. And he eventually gets involved with Delilah, as you'll see in Hashem when we come back. The whole story, the famous story, Samson and Delilah, and the consequence, which in the end, as I said, is a tikkun. Shimshon goes through a catharsis at the end. Right? It's a major catharsis because he actually died. But in the consequence, in the circumstance, he brings about tremendous salvation for Am Yisrael. Everything about him is L'Shem Shemayim, and he's judged how much L'Shem Shemayim, how pure his L'Shem Shemayim. You okay then? How pure is L'Shem Shemayim really is. That is what Shimshon is really about. I'll leave you to ponder on that amazing thought. Is the computer okay? Are we good? These things usually survive a bit of a knock, so I think they're okay. They usually seem to survive. I have to say to everybody, before you go, wish everybody really Chag Kasher V'Sameach. Have a wonderful, wonderful Chag. And look forward to seeing you all in 2 weeks. So really enjoy. Thank you very much, everybody.